Greetings, United Times. How are you doing?
Not bad.
Oh, can you hear me? Good. I think there are a lot of people that are disappointed because being the matinee idol that you are, people wanted to see you, but we'll have to deal with the phone.
All right. Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. I wanted to say that you are the lawyer. You have been Asata Shakur's lawyer since 1973, and you're currently at Rutgers University, and you are one of the founding members of the Conference of National Black Lawyers, and I don't want to take up any more time. And how did you get involved with Asata? That's the first question, then we're going to go to hear Asata herself.
Well, I first met Asata in 1973. She was laying in the hospital, close to death, handcuffed in a bed, while state and local and federal police attempted to question her in New Brunswick, New Jersey. At that time, I was the national director of the National Conference of Black Lawyers, an organization that had defended the political activists and the black community since its founding in 1968.
Okay, I think we're going to go to a clip of Asata, and then we'll come back to you.
Okay, very good.
All right, thank you.
Right.
Those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Juan Gonzalez. Welcome to all of our listeners and viewers around the country and around the world. We begin today's show looking at the case of Asata Shakur, a legendary figure within the Black Panther Party and the Black Liberation Army. On Thursday, she became the first woman ever to make the FBI's most wanted terrorist list. In addition, the FBI and the state of New Jersey doubled the reward for her capture to $2 million. Shakur was convicted in the May 2, 1973 killing of a New Jersey state trooper during a shootout that left one of her fellow activists dead. She was shot twice by police during the incident. In 1979, she managed to escape from jail, and she later fled to Cuba, where she received political asylum. She has long proclaimed her innocence. On Thursday, FBI Special Agent Aaron Ford spoke at a press conference announcing Shakur's placement on the most wanted terrorist list. He refers to Shakur as Joanne Chesimard, her original name.
Openly and freely in Cuba, she continues to maintain and promote her terrorist ideology. She provides anti-U.S. government speeches espousing the Black Liberation Army message of revolution and terrorism. No person, no matter what his or her political or moral convictions are, is above the law. Joanne Chesimard is a domestic terrorist who murdered a law enforcement officer, execution style.
That's FBI Special Agent Aaron Ford. In a moment, we'll be joined by two guests, the scholar and activist Angela Davis, who faced her own murder trial decades ago, and Lennox Hines, Asata Shakur's longtime attorney for some 40 years. But first, we turn to Asata Shakur in her own words. In 1998, Democracy Now! Aired her reading an open letter to Pope John Paul II during his trip to Cuba. She wrote the message after New Jersey state troopers sent the Pope a letter asking him to call for her extradition.
My name is Asata Shakur, and I was born and raised in the United States. I am a descendant of Africans who were kidnapped and brought to the Americas as slaves. I spent my early childhood in a racist, segregated South. I later moved to the northern part of the country, where I realized that Black people were equally victimized by racism and oppression. I grew up and became a political activist, participating in student struggles, the anti-war movement, and most of all, in the movement for the liberation of African Americans in the United States. I later joined the Black Panther Party, an organization that was targeted by the COINTELPRO program, a program that was set up by the Federal Bureau of Investigation to eliminate all political opposition to the U.S. government's policies, to destroy the Black liberation movement in the United States, to discredit activists, and to eliminate potential leaders. Under the COINTELPRO program, many political activists were harassed, imprisoned, murdered, or otherwise neutralized. As a result of being targeted by COINTELPRO, I, like many other young people, was faced with the threat of prison, underground, exile, or death. The FBI, with the help of local police agencies, systematically fed false accusations and fake news articles to the press, accusing me and other activists of crimes we did not commit. Although in my case, the charges were eventually dropped or I was eventually acquitted, the national and local police agencies created a situation where, based on their false accusations against me, any police officer could shoot me on sight. It was not until the Freedom of Information Act was passed in the mid-70s that we began to see the scope of the United States government's persecution of political activists. At this point, I think that it is important to make one thing very clear. I have advocated, and I still advocate, revolutionary changes in the structure and in the principles that govern the United States. I advocate self-determination for my people and for all oppressed people inside the United States. I advocate an end to capitalist exploitation, the abolition of racist policies, the eradication of sexism, and the elimination of political repression. If that is a crime, then I am totally guilty. To make a long story short, I was captured in New Jersey in 1973 after being shot with both arms held in the air and then shot again from the back. I was left on the ground to die, and when I did not, I was taken to a local hospital where I was threatened, beaten, and tortured. In 1977, I was convicted in a trial that can only be described as a legal lynching. In 1979, I was able to escape with the aid of some of my fellow comrades. I saw this as a necessary step, not only because I was innocent of the charges against me, but because I knew that the racist legal system in the United States, I would receive no justice. I was also afraid that I would be murdered in prison. I later arrived in Cuba, where I am currently living in exile as a political refugee. The New Jersey State Police and other law enforcement officials say they want to see me brought to justice. But I would like to know what they mean by justice. Is torture justice? I was kept in solitary confinement for more than 2 years, mostly in men's prisons. Is that justice? My lawyers were threatened with imprisonment and imprisoned. Is that justice? I was tried by an all-white jury without even the pretext of impartiality and then sentenced to life in prison plus 33 years. Is that justice? Let me emphasize that justice for me is not the issue I am addressing here. It is justice for my people that is at stake. When my people receive justice, I am sure that I will receive it too.
That is an excerpt of a letter Assata Shakur read, an open letter to Pope John Paul II during his trip to Cuba in 1998.
Okay, I wanted to make one statement before you start speaking. I thought it was very significant that the spokesperson for the FBI in New Jersey was a black person, when for many years, the only blacks that worked for the FBI was J. Edgar Hoover's chauffeur, and I think they had a janitor in that was it. So I wanted you to, you can begin your presentation now.
Okay. First of all, let me extend greetings to our friends, sisters and brothers, and comrades. Can I have a sense of whether or not the audience can hear me by the response?
Yes.
Can we have a response from the audience?
Hello.
Are you hearing
me? I don't hear anyone.
Louder.
Yes.
I'm saying greetings to you.
Yeah. Greetings back.
Did you hear that?
Did you hear that,
Dennis? No, I didn't hear. But if they can hear me, let me say this. I think this program that is being conducted now by the different books list is extremely important. It is important that we begin to fight back against the characterization and the mischaracterization of Assata. Assata Shakur is not a terrorist. The fact that the CIA and the FBI and the United States government is attempting to characterize her in this way, we have to fight back. Assata is our hero. She is a freedom fighter. She has been a victim of state terrorism. She's been a victim of the terrorist act of the United States. She has been a victim of the lawlessness of the FBI's counterintelligence program, the COINTELPRO program. Now, who is a terrorist? You need to look at this in context. For years, even as much as 5 years ago, Nelson Mandela was on the same terrorist list as Assata Shakur. Nelson Mandela, the president then of South Africa, was on the FBI's terrorist watch list. And he has been on that watch list since he was, even before he was captured, and he was on the terrorist watch list because all of the leaders of the ANC were characterized as terrorists. All of the members of the ANC were characterized as terrorists. And the African National Congress was characterized as a terrorist organization. And the reason for it was that the South African apartheid regime considered the ANC and its members and leaders as terrorists. The United States as an ally of South Africa then characterized Mandela and members of the ANC as terrorists. But we, who supported the ANC, knew that they were not terrorists, but they were freedom fighters. We, who know Assata Shakur, know that she is not a terrorist, but know that she is a freedom fighter. And so we have to now, on every anniversary of her liberation, we have to celebrate her liberation. We have to now launch a campaign within the United States government, within the Congress of the United States, starting with the Congressional Black Caucus, to educate them on who is Asada Shepherd. Asada is now characterized by the United States as a terrorist, but that is a mischaracterization. Asada was the crime for which, the only crime for which he has been convicted on the New Jersey Turnpike, occurred when she was being targeted by the FBI, when she was shot by the New Jersey State Police, when J. Edgar Hoover back in the early 1960s, when he began the counterintelligence program. It should be noted, and everyone should know, that the FBI had characterized the Panther Party as one of the most dangerous organizations, and to be targeted by the FBI. But they were not the only organization. The Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, was also targeted. The SCLC, led by Martin Luther King, was targeted. The Nation of Islam, the individuals like Stokely Carmichael, Rock Brown, Elijah Muhammad, Fred Hampton, Mark Kahn. You have Mondale Willander and Ed Poindexter, now in Nebraska, serving 43 years for crimes that they had not committed. Now, Asada, while she was traveling on the turnpike with Sonia Okoli and Zai, she was shot through the hand, broke her clavicle, severed her median nerve, and forensic evidence showed that she could not have fired any weapons. There were no neutron activation analysis showed that there was no residue of any gunpowder on her hand or her clothing, and yet she was convicted and sentenced to life imprisonment based upon the theory by the state police that she aided and abetted. There is no evidence, not one scintilla of evidence, that she had a gun in her hand, but that she was there, and one of the state troopers was killed, and there was a weapon in her car. That was the basis of her conviction. So she was characterized as a bank robber, cop killer, and there were at least four or five indictments against her in New York. She was never convicted of any crime, any robbery in her life. The only conviction was on the New Jersey Turnpike. And we need to understand this, that Asada Shakur, in her own words, she said, yes, I was a freedom fighter, and she fought for self-determination of black people in the United States. She joined a long line of freedom fighters, individuals who have fought and argued for self-determination of black people. Now, the United States government claims that, by characterizing her as a terrorist, does not claim that the government of Cuba is harboring terrorists. Now, let me make a few observations about this. The government of Cuba has granted political asylum to asylum. They did so based upon principles of international law. Most specifically, the 1951 United Nations Convention on Refugees characterizes and describes asylum as a refugee. And a refugee is a person who is outside of his or her country of nationality, and that person has a well-founded fear of being persecuted because of his or her race, religion, nationality, or a member of the social political group, or based upon your political beliefs. And asylum fits the definition of a refugee pursuant to the Refugee Convention. Now, the United States is disingenuous in accusing the government of Cuba of harboring terrorists, when in fact it is Cuba that has been a victim of 50 years of the United States terrorist plots and schemes, which over a 50-year period has cost over 3,500 lives in Cuba and over 2,000 individuals permanently disabled and injured between the years of 1959 and 2003. There was a man by the name of Luis Posada Carreles, a CIA agent who directed the campaign of terrorism against Cuba. And this is from United States soil, including the 1976 bombing of a Cuban airliner, killing 78 persons. And Corrales has been harbored by the United States government and is living now in the United States. The United States has CIA agents spanning across the world, looking for whom they call individuals who are plotting to launch terrorist attacks in the United States. They are capturing these individuals. Many of these individuals are not subjecting them to any trials, torturing them, and in some cases, bringing them back to the United States. Now, there are five Cubans who did the same thing to their country. They went into southern Florida, Miami, and were looking at those people who were launching attacks, terrorist attacks, from U.S. shore, Miami, to Cuba. And these five individuals called the Cuban Five are now in U.S. prison, many of them serving life sentences. And the United States have banned them five. Are these individuals doing exactly what U.S. agents are doing right now in Yemen, Pakistan, Iraq, Afghanistan, India, Morocco, Nigeria, all over the world? But yet, the United States has convicted these five Cubans and characterized them as spies. And I mention this so that we all view review the actions of the United States in its proper context and view it with the type of skepticism that we have to view the United States characterizing a freedom fighter as a Sada Shakur, as a she is not a freedom fighter, she is our hero. And in the most recent election in New York City for mayor, there was a write-in campaign for a Sada Shakur as mayor of New York. And that is the sort of thing that we have to do. We have to target her as our hero. Okay, so those are my thoughts.
Mr. Hines, what is the significance of Asada Shakur being placed on the FBI's top 10 most wanted list? And could you discuss the fact that she is the first woman ever to be added to this list?
Well, the significance of her being put, first of all, not only has she been put on the list, but the bounty that has been put on her head is $2 million. Previously, the governor of New Jersey and the New Jersey State Police had put a bounty of $1 million. This was doubled to $2 million. The objective here is to give them the economic blockade that has been placed on Cuba for the past 50 years. The objective is to seek some Cubans who are desperate for money might kill her while she was in Cuba. And so he wanted to drag her underground or have her killed. So that is why the bounty has been raised. But the Cuban people are going to protect her. And the Cuban government is going to defend it. So that is not going to work. But the putting her on the first woman on the terrorist watch list is to, in fact, demonize her. And what we have to do is to fight back in terms of this type of educational program. And more importantly, for us to celebrate not only her life, but celebrate the liberation.
Now, I'm sorry, but have you finished?
Yes.
I understand that Asada Shakur wrote a second book. And is that true? And what is the status of that particular book?
I know. She has not, but she has been writing a second book. It has not been completed. And it is now in several drafts, but it has not been completed.
Okay, now the...
I should have said to the audience that I bring you greetings from her. She is doing well, and she sends her revolutionary greetings to Cuba. Okay.
Thank you. Someone has a question. This is a question from the audience. Has anyone ever been removed from the FBI's most wanted list?
Yes. Mandela was.
Nelson Mandela.
Yes.
What steps were taken for him to be removed?
What steps were taken for President Mandela to be removed?
It was an act of Congress. Most of the Congress, Congress persons in the United States were shocked and surprised that Mandela was on the terrorist list. There were members of Congress who were rushing up to have their pictures taken with Mandela, not knowing that he was on the terrorist watch list. When that was brought to their attention, they were embarrassed. And they, in fact, passed special legislation to have him removed from the terrorist watch list. They themselves were not aware.
It's my understanding that Cuba is not unique in refusing to extradite people that the United States has named as terrorists, and that other countries have done the same. Can you talk about that?
Yes. The United States has attempted to use its bilateral treaty, extradition treaty, in the past to extradite individuals the United States have considered to be terrorists, particularly hijackers. If you recall, back in the 70s, a number of Panthers hijacked aircraft. Some of them they flew to Cuba, some they flew to Algeria, and these people ended up in France. There were two individuals by the name of Hotau, H-E-R-P-O-W, and Brown, B-R-O-W-M, their last names. These were Panthers who hijacked a U.S. aircraft from the United States, demanded $1 million in ransom, and had the aircraft, the hijacked aircraft, flown to Algeria. And then from Algeria, they were then detained in Algeria, and then they ended up in France. The $1 million ransom money was returned. The aircraft was returned. The crew were returned as passengers. But France refused to return the hijackers. This infuriated the United States because France was an ally. There was a bilateral treaty, extradition treaty, signed by both France and the United States. In addition, France and the United States had signed certain multilateral treaties dealing with aircraft hijacking. In particular, they had signed the Montreal Convention, and they had also signed the Hague Convention against aircraft hijacking. The French said that they believed that these two individuals who had hijacked the plane did so for political reasons and because of racism in the United States, and they would not return the individuals to the United States and granted them political asylum and characterized them as political refugees. Pursuant to their obligations under both the Montreal Convention and the Hague Convention, they tried them for aircraft hijacking, gave them the minimum sentence, and they're still in France. So that has been the history of an ally of the United States refusing to take the United States position that individuals who are hijacked, and this is Panthers who are hijacked an aircraft, were terrorists.
Well, thank you for that question. Any questions from the audience? Okay, Lennox, I have a question about the there was a Carreras, whose name you mentioned. There was a plane that was blown up at 78, 70, you mentioned it, the year.
1976.
1976, on that particular plane, you had Koreans, I think you had people from Barbados, Guyana, a lot of athletes. Could you talk about that?
Yes, there were 78 passengers on that plane. It was an Air Cubana air flight that took off from Barbados, heading for Havana. On that aircraft, there were individuals from a number of countries, but the plane carried the entire sensing team of Cuba. But the total number of individuals who lost their lives was 78. And Luis Carreras, a CIA agent, Luis Posada Carreras, admitted his involvement and his planning of that bombing, and now he's been protected by the United States government. And of course, they refused to return him to either Venezuela, because he's a citizen of Venezuela and not in Cuba.
Thank you. I think Miguel has another question.
Yes. Yes.
Could you tell us in what form the campaign to defend the satellite is taking, and what are the kinds of things that is there an organization that is or committee that is formed to carry out this campaign, and what sort of things that they are asking people to do, like specifically?
Now, I am not the best person to talk to you about the campaign in particular, but I can tell you what I have been informed of in terms of what occurred back on November 2nd. On November 2nd, in the United States, November 2nd of this year, was the first time there was an attempt to hold on the 34th anniversary of Asada's liberation, a celebration. Now, this was done in New York, Washington, D.C., Houston, Texas, Oakland, California, Chicago, Detroit. I think there was a celebration in Charlotte, North Carolina, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. But the objective is to have this celebration in all of the 50 states in the United States, and now in Canada, on the 34th anniversary, on the anniversary of Asada's liberation. So it would be every November, on a date to be coordinated.
Once again, are there any questions? Because I have some questions if no one else has any questions.
Well, brother, I have to sign off.
You have a time.
In the next 5 minutes.
I understand. Okay, this is a question.
Because I have Sarah, up until 4 o'clock, it's now 5 after 4, and I have another engagement I have to go to.
I understand. The last question is, could you talk about Asata's internationalism? I'm reading, you wrote the foreword to her book. I don't know if I mentioned that. You and Angela, you wrote the first foreword. I have a copy. I think it came out in 1987, but it was reproduced in 2000. And you wrote the first foreword, and then Angela wrote a foreword on the next one. But could you talk about Asata Shakur's internationalism? She talks about Africa, the Caribbean, and you know, a lot of people are stuck on whatever group they come from, and some people are even stuck on whatever tribe they come from. Could you talk about Asata's internationalism?
Well, Asata is an internationalist, and that has written during the 34 years or so that she has spent in Cuba. She has worked with the liberation movement in Southern Africa. She worked, as you know, the Cubans have provided material aid and solidarity to the liberation movement. In fact, on the Isle of Time, they have set up a whole community for refugees and training of students in their native languages from Angola, Mozambique, Guinea-Bissau, Namibia, and South Africa. And she has established strong ties with those individuals who spend time being educated in Cuba. And many of these individuals have gone back to take the leadership position in their country. So she has always been a supporter in terms of anti-imperialist activities.
All right, Mr. Hines, I would like to thank you, and I would like to acknowledge the fact that you were a good friend of Charles Roach, and were with Charles Roach was a member of the National Conference of Black Lawyers. And on behalf of everyone sitting here and everyone that will see or hear this cast, this witness, when it becomes a podcast, I would like to thank you very much for your work. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much. In fact, I'm glad you mentioned it. It was about a year ago, that I traveled to Toronto in order to celebrate the life, work, and contributions of my comrade and friend Charlie Roach, who is not just a warrior, but a human rights lawyer, and someone who, as I said publicly, Dylan, has been my hero. So thank you very much.
All right.